This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, the podcast where we cover all the pop culture we love to hate, from the classic reality TV moments of the past and present to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. I'm looking at you, Jax Taylor. I'm your host, Ryan Bailey.
Martin had a dream. magic, have a dream.
Man, it would be amazing if I could sing. What's up, folks? It's So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. This is Ryan Bailey, and this is Thursday, which means there is one more day until that sweet, sweet weekend, which we have earned. My God, you guys, it has been a week. Man, it seems like every day something has gone wrong. Way too emotional this week. Way too much drama this week. I don't know if you've found that as well. Way too many things breaking. It is just... I'm in the doldrums of January. Thank God there's a new month coming right around. Friday, you guys, is going to be a little different. Real Housewives of Orange County I've been doing on Friday, but since they didn't air an episode this week, which how dare they? You know I need you, Real Housewives of Orange County, and you turn your back on me and you don't air an episode? Is this how we run a network, Bravo? We get people hooked on a show and then you decide not to air it? What is wrong? Who raised you, Bravo? That is just ridiculous. I need to watch Noella make a fool of herself in Cabo as Shannon Bedore pours margaritas down her throat. Come on. So Friday instead, I'm going to do the Vanderpump Rules Part 2 reunion. I talked about Part 1 yesterday. What a great episode that was. 2+ hours of medium enjoyment. But I had a great time, so I hope you had a good time listening to it. But I'm going to talk about Vanderpump Rules as a season. I got a lot of DJ James Kennedy dirt. I got a lot of Raquel stuff I want to talk about. I've got Stassi Schroeder's new book I want to mention. There's going to be a Vanderpump heavy episode on Friday because my thing with this is, you know, I said at multiple times this season that I didn't like it, but I watched that first part of the reunion and I got to say, man, I will never give up on that show. You know, here's the deal. We don't give up on family, right? We don't give up on family. We don't give up on things that have brought us such joy. And it doesn't matter. Sometimes, you know, we as humans have an off month or year or season in our own lives. You can't turn your back on family. That's how I feel about it. So I will go down with this ship. But I think they left us with a ship that is sailing in the right direction. I swear to God. DJ James Kennedy's acting like a little bitch on social media. I'll get into that on Friday. But wow, what? I mean, it's like really like it's like the British Jacks in a way, you know? So we'll get all into that Friday. I'll do a recap of the second part of the reunion. Also, happy Che Day, Che Diaz, baby. That's Miranda being excited about Che. There is a new Sex and the City today. I have not watched it yet. So I'm very excited to see our girl, how do you say that with non, but like to see our person Che? Like if you say to see our dude or see our girl, like what do you say for non, I'm not even joking, like what do you say for non, but like to, hey, let's see our, you can't say bro and you can't say girl, like let's see our them, like what do you say? Like I really, cause I'm all good, like I totally respect that, and I want to call everybody by their right nomenclature or what they're most comfortable with, and I know, but I really do, like, what do you say in certain situations? I know I sound as old as I sound, but there's got to be some website or stuff to, like, to help you with that so you can respect people properly. Anyways, I have already stuck so many feet in my mouth right now, and all I'm saying is that I want to say the right thing. But I'm also saying Che Diaz is ridiculous, not because of the non-binary thing, but because she went to Cleveland to do stand-up comedy, and we get to find out if she is going to town on a bunch of ladies. Because Che Diaz, they get a lot of ladies. Che Diaz, Drew Barrymore actually had a clip today talking to Cynthia Nixon and said that she loves Che. I'm telling you, I've actually talked to a lot of girls. You girls out there listening might be the girls, but I've talked to a lot of girls that like find Che hot. I need to explore this. I'm telling you, Che needs a spinoff. So happy Che Day to everybody. I'll talk a little bit more about that on Friday. I might even do a little bit of a mini recap, as I've been threatening to do, of the new Sex and the City episode. And of course, Jenny let us know. Jenny Gwynn from Salt Lake City, who just got fired yesterday, let us know what her reasoning was for putting up a lot of violent and gross and racist memes. And I'll get into that on Friday as well, but I don't think you're going to believe. let's just say her excuse totally checks out. It's a totally normal excuse. No, I cannot wait to get into this with you guys and play her audio clip of her letting us all know what happened and what a weird, it could have happened to any of us. It could have happened to any of us because we all have social media teams, even when we're not on a show before we're even famous or C-list level famous. So much stuff happening. But today, I want to actually share with you an interview I talked about yesterday. I had just the best time talking to our next guest. There are just people that I've already booked her again on another episode because I just had so much fun and she's so damn smart and so I just loved it. And she wrote a book that I would love to say I read, but I listened to. I listened to the audiobook because, like I say in the interview, my eyes don't seem to work anymore. But her name is Gabrielle Bluestone. And she is a journalist, a licensed attorney from New York, whose writing has appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the New York Observer, Sunday Times Magazine, Esquire, InStyle, Gawker. She's the Emmy-nominated producer of Netflix's Fire, and that is the documentary about the Fire Festival, the better documentary, and the associate producer of Different Flowers, winner of the 2017 Kansas City Film Fest Festival Prize. But I just thought she was amazing. And I got to tell you, I was super intimidated going into this interview because I listened to the book and I just fell in love with it because, okay, so the book is called Hype, you guys. And I talk about it in the beginning of this episode with her and we talk about it throughout, but it's just, I cannot speak higher enough about it. I just really loved it. And I think you guys are going to love it too. And as I explain in the interview, it shares the DNA of reality shows, of things that we love, of the internet, of this whole culture that we are obsessed with, or that I'm obsessed with, and I think you guys are too. So the book is called Hype, How Scammers, Grifters, and Con Artists Are Taking Over the Internet and Why We're Following, by Gabrielle Bluestone. So this goes into all like this, the internet hype between people like Billy McFarlane, who started the Fire Festival. We have Caroline Calloway in here. We have fast fashion being talked about. Anna Delvey. All of the greats that, you know, is kind of mixed in with pop culture now, but these are scammers. This book breaks it down beautifully, and I could have talked to her for hours. It got my mind racing. You'll hear how excited I am. I also did have a huge coffee beforehand, so I want to forewarn you. I was bouncing off the walls, but it was just a great conversation. So I don't want to talk too much. I just want to get into this conversation because we get into the Kanye of it all. We get into Julia Fox. We get into all of this stuff because all of this is, it's all melding together. It's all kind of one pot now, where we used to have movie stars, musicians, and now we're turning grifters, we're turning scammers into celebrities. And it's just, it's so fascinating, but you have to be aware. And I think this book is a great place to start. And this guest is a great guest. And her name is Gabrielle Bluestone, one more time. And here she is. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to iHeartRadio. So Bad It's Good. Today, we have somebody that I have wanted to talk to literally for a year, and this shows you how disorganized I am. But I got to read her book, and then I didn't read her book because reading was so foreign to me over the pandemic, and all I did was watch TV. And then finally, I got to read her book. Actually, I listened to her book because my eyes don't work for reading anymore. And you guys, it was as good as I wanted it to be. It was like one of those things that I knew I would love, and I loved it. Like, I actually was like outside exercising, listening to the book, like making smiling faces, like, yes, that's so true. Like things like that. But it delves into everything that we care about. Like, it's through like a social media lens. It's through scammers, grifters, all the things that we're kind of growing up around, and how
pop culture and social media, I believe, are really intersecting in so many fascinating points. And I already wish there was a sequel to this book. And I was so sad it ended. But not only is she the author of this book, but she is the she's the producer of Netflix's Fire documentary. If you remember that, I remember exactly where I was when I watched that. The book is called Hype: How Scammers, Grifters, and Con Artists Are Taking Over the Internet and Why We're Following. Gabrielle Bluestone, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And thank you for that intro. I am sending that to my publisher right away.
Well, no, I mean, it really is. I geeked out so hard on this book, and it's so nice when reality meets your expectations, where I was like, I was so excited going in because you guys, the device she uses for this book is Billy McFarland of the Fire Festival. And we've talked about that many times on the podcast, but it was such a great device. What about him? Were you like, that's a book right there that I can get into everything about?
Yeah. So what I found so fascinating about the Fire Festival wasn't just, you know, how audacious it was and how they were able to kind of pull the wool over some of the most hyper connected millennials and Gen Z people like on the internet. But it was why it works so well and really what it said about our society. And I started to see these connections between like him and Elizabeth Holmes with Theranos and, you know, things that don't seem to be on their face connected, but they all kind of used the same device, which, you know, not to plug the book, but is hype. And you see that at play in every walk of life now. So it's not just on social media. It's not just, you know, with these like millennial focused companies, like people are using hype in the VC world, in startups, you know.
I mean, you go into all of this. I mean, you guys, she even has a whole like section about Caroline Calloway, who is an enigma wrapped in a riddle, wrapped in just wanting us to give her money. And it's just, you even do fast fashion in terms of, was it Arielle Charnas or who is the lady that you...
Danielle Bernstein.
Oh, Danielle Bernstein. Sorry. Sorry. You can see where she's I might have been confused. Yeah, she, by the way, it was amazing.
That was my favorite part of the book was, you know, I went into it thinking I knew this girl from the internet and I arrived at her house and realized like, oh no, I have been totally scammed by this image as well. And so that chapter was really fun to write, kind of just challenging, you know, realizing what you think you know for life and seeing that so in your face. Even writing the book, I was surprised.
Well, it is interesting, just even on a personal level, I related to so much of this is my Instagram account grows and it's just on silly memes. It's silly. It's like silliness. And people think that they might kind of like, oh, well, he must be a real idiot. You know, like it's so funny to think of people's perceptions of you. And you're like, of course, that's what I put out there. So why wouldn't it is interesting to start thinking about, but these people are using it as this tool to create this hype and to potentially scam people or make money off people. They're not delivering on the product or the dream that social media promises us, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's not just limited to people that are selling things on social media. I think the very act of having an Instagram account, even if it's bare bones, you know, you are curating an image of yourself that you are selling to the world. And the vast majority of people with, you know, a sizable following, those people will never meet them in real life. What they know of that person is this image they've curated. And you know, on some level, we as the consumers or as users know this, but it's so hard to remember. Like you really think that that's who that person is.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting to, I've had Instagram now for like over a decade. And it's really interesting to see how I started with it and how I use it now. And it's two completely different things. And I no longer would even consider putting personal aspects of my life up there. Like I don't even have that luxury of sharing things to my friends anymore because I've got to make it Bravo related or pop culture related. Mm-hmm. And you really get caught up in this thing where, I mean, this is so obvious. We talk about this all the time, but yeah, man, I'll have a bad day on Instagram. I'll be like, I'm not funny. I suck. I'm going to lose followers. And then there's days where I must be really funny because I gained followers. It's so ridiculous and upsetting. I'm so geeking out. So sorry for my excitement, but what you're a writer and you've written for so many amazing publications and your articles, I was going through so many of them. What made you even want to start in writing to begin with? And where did you start?
Well, I always loved reading. I was one of those kids that always had a book with them. And I was a journalism major in college, but I did not think that that was a career that I could support myself on. And so I went to law school instead. And
yeah, you're a lawyer as well. That's
if
wild.
You need a lawyer, I am licensed in the state of New York.
Now she does. She represents Tom Girardi, you guys. So that's she's Tom Girardi's lawyer.
You know, I did win a box of Tom Girardi's Best Lawyer awards at auction.
Oh, may I direct you to that photo in the background of Tom Girardi
and
his, it's an oil painting of him and his brothers. I won a box of random paintings and trophies too, like Super Lawyers of the Year award. Like I have too many Tom Girardi, like it's, I'm even worried about myself. I have so much Tom Girardi memorabilia.
So I have to ask you, have you had any bad luck since you picked up the items?
Yeah, I'm still doing the podcast. And, it's not everything. Yeah, a lot of bad luck. Yes. No, I got the lingerie too.
Oh.
Yeah, so double bad luck.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, you had to pick these items up locally in LA, and I'm based in New York. So I had a friend go and pick it up for me. And about a week after, he called me and was like, Gabby, you need to come get this box. Like ever since I've gotten it, like bad things have been happening. He actually staged the whole thing and it's been fine ever since.
Oh my God. I use it for like to do cameos and stuff. I'll take the lingerie and I'll go out in front of Sutton's store in Beverly Hills and I'll hold it up or I'll go in the back of the Serp parking lot because I'm insane. And by the way, you guys, there is a Housewives connection in this book. Leah McSweeney is part of a chapter. She talks about streetwear, but all of this because it's interesting. So did you grow up in New York?
I did. I'm a city kid. But yeah, so she had, you know, the streetwear brand Supreme. She had a streetwear brand herself and had been kind of, you know, Supreme is made to kind of mock other people's logos and it's all about appropriation. And so her brand, Married to the Mob, did something similar and they sued her for $10 million.
Well, because she did the Supreme bitch, right?
Yes. Yeah. But it really revealed kind of just how fake their whole anti-corporate, you know, renegade position was because the second it was challenged, they turned to the corporate lawyers.
That was my thing reading, listening to this was that Supreme story was that like, is there any truth out there anymore? Is there anything that's actually what it is that's subversive as it promises? Like everything is a corporation or sponsored, even Coachella, which I remember when it started off as an alternative festival. And now it's, you know, owned by these conglomerates and they're trying to sell that this is the experience like Fire Festival. And they actually do show music at Coachella, but it's very different from what I started with, you know, like everything is changing in this way. I mean, what do you think about all of that?
You know, do you remember there was a meme going around for a while where someone would cut into something and it would turn out to be cake and it's like everything is cake.
Yeah.
Everything is marketing. There really isn't. If you know about, I mean, I'm sure there are some underground things that are authentic, but for the most part, everything is fake. Everything is, you know, marketing. And if you look at these brands, like their actual marketing compared, and I think you saw this a lot over last summer when the George Floyd protests were happening, all of a sudden every brand wanted to be woke and reiterate their commitment to diversity. And then you look at their Instagram versus like their corporate makeup, and there's no basis in reality between the two. Like it's two totally separate entities, but we buy into these legends that they're creating anyway.
And the thing in the 70s and 80s, we wouldn't be so aware of it because we didn't have social media, but now everything's in our face all the time. So we have a, you know, a 24 hour a day ad hooked to our phones that we're always checking in on. But I also thought about the same thing about Billy McFarlane is there any actual wealth out there anymore? Or is it just people stealing from other people? Like this ties majorly in with Bravo or what we saw with Tom Girardi, but also this Billy McFarlane, like, I guess, can you say that he's at least a go-getter? Like, I mean, what can we say of him that is like he doesn't seem to quit even in prison?
Yeah, I mean, he is the same way that I look at like Donald Trump or Elon Musk, right? Like the underlying product is not what he's selling. He's good at selling himself. He's good at marketing and he's good at talking people into thinking they're going to have a good time. I mean, this is a guy who is 25, 26 years old. He raised $26 million from like some real investors and also some people that didn't know what they were doing. But by selling them on the idea that they would have entree to this lifestyle, you know, what Fyre Festival was, wasn't a music festival. It was like Blink 182, who's going to pay money to go see that? What he was selling was a chance to live a day in the life of Kendall Jenner or Bella Hadid. And the people that invested in that were people that wanted to say that they were friends with those people or they were hanging out in that world.
Well, you go into great detail in the book about the models. Like, it's one of the only bills he actually paid you guys with two of these models. He got every big model. Like, Kendall Jenner made such a huge amount of money. And then, you know, when all of this went south, she got criticized for it, which, by the way, I still to this day think Kendall Jenner, she gets the worst Kardashian deals of all time. It's either this or Pepsi and a Black Lives Matter commercial. Like, but all of these models, he really did want to sell that lifestyle. Everybody put that, what was it, a blue square on there?
Orange tile.
Orange tile on their Instagram all on the same day. And we were supposed to bite, and a lot of us did, of, wow, all of these hot models. And they spent so much time over there living a grand life, but also filming this life that we would want to lead as well.
And listen, I fell for it. I was a reporter that broke the story, but the reason that I started looking into it is because I was on Instagram and thinking, am I missing the party of the year? Is everyone going but me? Like, do I need to get a ticket right now?
And you wrote this for Vice, right? Originally.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And I looked it up and you know, it was so funny. Once you got off of Instagram and onto their actual website, it was night and day. It was that kind of, you know, separate reality that I was just talking about, where it was so unprofessional and there were no pictures of anything. Like, it didn't exist. And you could tell from looking at what they were providing that it didn't exist, but nobody was really leaving Instagram to check it out.
I want to talk to you about that Friday of this story breaking the Fyre Fest. I always remember being at the acting studio I taught at my desk, and my friend sends me a photo of cheese on bread with a really nasty looking cheese sandwich. And then you really broke this story that, I mean, this really all of a sudden just exploded everywhere. But in your telling of it in the book, we see how much led up to this moment. And it was this really weird Hail Mary pass of like, let's just get through this. And like, Billy was there on the ground, but he was like starting to get mean with people. To me, this is the sequel to The Social Network in a lot of ways. Like, this is the, you know, that on steroids, or what happens because of that. This is that story. What are your thoughts when this starts going south?
Well, I mean, first of all, this is the cautionary tale of The Social Network, right? Like, Billy McFarland became an entity in the business world because people were looking at him through the Mark Zuckerberg lens. I mean, it all started when he went to Bucknell and he won a startup competition. I think he won like $30,000 to start a company, and that company never went anywhere. And it wasn't an original idea and nothing ever came of it. But all of a sudden he had, you know, the Chiron, like, winner of this competition, you know, founder of Sling, like, who's ever heard of Sling? But that was enough to like move up to the next level and to get the next level of investors. And that was a venture called Magnesis, and that didn't go anywhere, but he got New York Post articles about it.
And he made this card, he made a heavy metal card because you felt cool with a heavy metal card.
Yeah. And so you kind of see how people, it really lays bare the system and how easy it is to manipulate it and how easy it is to manipulate public attention, right? Like, if anyone had bothered to look at the companies that he had started, you would see that, like, this kid does not know what he's doing. Like, do not give him any money. But nobody was looking at it that way. They were looking at the press. They were, you know, looking at the models that were at his party. And that was enough to blind people to it. And that's something that you see again and again. You know, there was a really fascinating New York Times article a couple of weeks ago about people who had invested in Theranos. And a lot of them were saying, like, you know, we asked to see a demonstration. We asked to see the science, but she wouldn't do it. And Henry Kissinger was on the board and David Boies was endorsing it. So we figured, like, why not? You know, that's the same influencer marketing that, like, Kendall Jenner got people to go to Fyre Festival. It's like a really similar psychological impulse.
Is it because we want to believe in something, or do we want to believe in money? I don't mean because... you know, want to believe in something bigger than ourselves, you know, like, that's what I mean. I remember every year at Coachella being so excited, but also it was because there was a lifestyle. My friends were all there, all of these magical things. I would look forward to every year. And that's what just reading this book got me really, I was already scared, but this got me even more scared because we are getting sold this lifestyle. And we made Fyre Festival an actual entity now. Like it's a actual thing bigger than it ever could have been because it failed so hard.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like human psychology tied up in that. Part of it is, I was not fortunate enough to go to Coachella when it was still like a cool underground thing, but I've been to Coachella and, you know, I had a fun time, but I think most people that go to events like that feel the impulse to portray themselves as having a bit more fun perhaps than they actually did. And that in turn kind of leads you to like look back on it and think, oh, that was great. I'll do it again. Even if you didn't maybe have the best time because you posted the picture on social media.
That's it. If Coachella said, hey guys, we're doing no Instagram this year, Coachella mm-hmm. wouldn't exist. Like you mm-hmm. go there to get the shots now, you know, like that yeah. is the thing of look at me in this amazing lifestyle with a big Ferris wheel in the background or something. And that's what you have to show for it.
I was just talking to my friend who's getting married in October, and there is so much to plan. You got to do the food. You got to do the food tasting. You got to book the venue, talk about the DJ. And then not to mention all of the emotion that goes into this. And then all the while you're like, ooh, what would I do if I had a wedding? I've been a part of a lot of weddings over the years, and it's an incredibly stressful process. You go from this newly engaged bliss to overwhelmed by invitation paper and flower colors in the blink of an eye. So using Zola helps with wedding planning from start to finish, and it makes every decision easier so you can stay in your bliss. With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place, from the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste that delicious cake. Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually enjoyable. There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go or on your couch. Zola helps couples plan the wedding they really want with tons of unique features and personalized recommendations based on a couple's preferences. Every Zola wedding is as unique as the couple planning it. They've thought of everything you'll need and have built every tool to get you to I do, including customized checklists to get you moving, keep you on track, and prepare you for what's next. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So, the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And that's one of the scary things about social media to me now is that I think, and not this isn't universal, but I think people who are very online, especially people who are in the business of portraying their lifestyle online, are no longer having experiences for the actual experience. It's for how you can portray it to other people and what it says about you rather than like your own feeling about it. And that's scary.
It's really scary. Like, I mean, I've talked about that on this show of like going into something that I've been so excited for and then realizing I'm not even present when I'm in that experience or at that concert or at that play. And I mean, people forget the Coachella thing is interesting just because they started it as one weekend, then went to 2 weekends of 3 days each. And the first weekend is where all the companies go to throw their parties. Like they throw these huge parties. Brett Boldhouse comes out. And so everybody's like, first weekend. And then nobody actually goes and sees the music because they're so busy at the corporate parties that they want to get tickets to. Second weekend, you guys, it's still sold out, but it's like the older people, the people that aren't trying to get into Electric Carnival or what some BS like that. And it's just really fascinating. It's like, wait, this is a music festival, right? But it's not anymore.
Yeah, I remember. I think it's like Neon Carnival, right? I remember that being.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Like, we got to go to that.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Neon Carnival.
Yeah, we're going to leave the music early. So
yes, that's what I'm like. I never will understand that. I'm like, oh, I got too tanked at the like Oakley's party or something that I couldn't make it to the concert. And you're like, that's wild to the point where you almost see it. I mean, we're in a weird spot now with the pandemic, but you even see it in the booking. It's not as original anymore. It's not as, you know, it's just like throwing up as much as you can. It's like quantity over quality.
Yeah.
Has Billy, sorry. So what was that?
I was just gonna say that's something that also is disturbing, and you see play out on social media and in real life, the flattening effect that having these corporations become part of the culture has had. You know, like, you go on social media and you see your friends posting, and those posts are intermingled with corporate brands who are trying to post as if they're your friends too. And celebrities are trying to portray themselves in the same way. Like, everyone is behaving in a certain way so that you know, if you're scrolling through, like, you don't realize what's marketing and what's real anymore, because it's all so condensed and it all looks alike.
Yeah.
And I would just add that, like, I think that's kind of where even things like QAnon come from, right? Like, if you are reading shit on the internet, sorry, if you're reading stuff on the internet.
No, you can cuss. You can curse on here. It's fine.
Great.
Oh, good. Yeah.
If
yeah.
You're reading shit on the internet all
whoa,
day.
Whoa, whoa,
right?
Too far. That was...
at a certain point, like, how do you remember what you read on the New York Times and what you read on Reddit? Right. It all starts to, like, meld together in your brain. Like, the internet is poisoning our brain.
Oh, with Bravo, especially. I mean, or with Des Moines, that culture and all that stuff, is that Des Moines even says these are not factual. These could be completely made up. People just send them and I post them. And that's a really, as much as I enjoy a good celebrity sighting, and I have enjoyed talking to Des Moines in the past, it is really dangerous, because I could put out something right now that could destroy somebody's life or career. And it wouldn't even matter if it was fact-checked, as long as it got to over 500,000 eyes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're screwed, basically. That's the whole...
I mean, I naturally have a very healthy cynicism, and I think that's kind of, you know, the onus is on the consumer and on the reader, unfortunately. Like, there is no, you know, protection against disinformation or false marketing or outright fraud in most cases. You know, if an influencer doesn't label something as an ad, like, there's not really much anyone can do about it. There's not, like, a framework, you know, for the government to, like, reprimand them or something. At worst, they'll send a strongly worded letter to, like, the company or something like that.
Nothing matters anymore. I mean, it's really interesting, these frameworks that we've set up for ourselves, and it's made everything kind of a little less realistic, or we're not precious anymore. I don't know. The Billy McFarland thing is, he's such a unique individual, but I'm not trying to say that as a compliment, just because once he was even in jail, you guys, I mean, speaking of the podcasting world, he tried to start a podcast even, and was doing it through phone calls, and he just couldn't. And then he was even, I don't know if it was when he was awaiting trial or something, he was potentially selling, like, experiences again of, I can get you Adele tickets. By the way, I would love to see what Billy could have done right now to Adele's Vegas show that didn't happen. Like, yeah. He was selling access. He was selling access again. Like, what is the update on Billy McFarland? Have you kept tabs with him? And has he ever reached out to you about the book?
Yeah, so it was actually much worse than you're describing. He already pled guilty to the first set of felonies, and he was out on bail awaiting sentencing. And he launched a second felony scam. He wasn't just offering people, you know, experiences. He was selling tickets to things he couldn't have. So he was offering, you know,
the Met Gala.
Or, like, the Victoria's Secret fashion show. And I actually called them up and I was like, hey, you know, how are you selling these tickets? And he gave me some explanation, like, well, you know, the models got a certain number of allotted seats and they've agreed to let us sell them. The models didn't get cast until, like, 6 months after, when we were talking. Like, there's a very, back when the show was happening, it was, like, a very specific, like, August audition thing, and you would see all the girls go in. It was a Daily Mail fodder. Like they were just inventing these scenarios to raise as much money as they could before he went to jail. So this was one of the wilder moments of my career. I published a story about what he was doing, and, like, 6 hours later, the FBI arrested him and he went back to jail. I have not heard from him since, although he's moved prisons a couple of times. I used to get like jailhouse snitches reaching out to me. I don't know if that's the right term, but people that knew.
If you're about to tell me you're on Love After Lockup, I'm going to be really upset. Like, you had jailhouse snitches reach out to you? How does that even come? Like, do they mail you a letter, or, like, what's the email system in jail?
They have, like, cell phones secreted away, but people were trying to sell me pictures of him and information about him. Eventually he got caught with a recording device. So he had, like,
for his book, right? That was going to pay for the damages to the people he scammed. Yeah.
Yeah. But that actually turned out very poorly for him because everyone thought he was a snitch. Whatever he was using it for, the people in prison around him didn't trust him anymore. And he was also punished for it. He was, you know, this part is kind of sad. He was put in solitary confinement for a very long period of time, moved prisons. He was originally, I'm blanking on the name now, Otisville, which is where Michael Cohen served time served time. I think he and the Situation like played basketball together for a while. But it's a convenient location if you have family in New York and you want people to come visit you. So he was moved after that. He tried to launch this podcast and was again put in solitary confinement. I'm not sure of his current status now, but things have gotten demonstrably worse for him ever since. Like the guy just cannot stop.
Yeah, I mean, but Michael Cohen in the Situation, you get two more people. It's like a jailhouse Big Brother or something.
That's a Bravo show I'd watch.
That's what I'm saying. Well, when it comes to Bravo, actually, that's interesting is that today I woke up to the news that Jenny from Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, Bravo did fire her. I don't know if you kept up with Salt Lake or the news, but there's another thing that's very interesting is that social media, you know, coming down on the sides of these of morality, of things that are right and wrong, of things that we want to see action, of Bravo potentially not moving fast enough. So did they do this because they actually care about the images that Jenny posted, or did they do this because they didn't want to cause more of a stink after they saw the reaction from the fans? We're always confused with Bravo because sometimes they, you know, and during the pandemic, when we were really in the heart of riots and stuff, Stassi, Jax, and Kristen got let go from Vanderpump Rules. I always wonder now if that had happened today, if they would have been let go. I always wonder if the heat of the moment, like what, I still sometimes don't know where Bravo falls in on it. And Leah McSweeney is a perfect example from Real Housewives of New York this past season, where you had a cast member who she's been on the show before say that Ramona flat out said, this is what happens when we have Black housewives or African-American housewives. And Bravo still hasn't done anything with any of that, even though formal complaints have been filed from her and a crew member. I mean, does this... I don't understand which way Bravo is coming or going on these issues.
I'm with you. They are wildly inconsistent in the way that they handle these kinds of situations. And you know, it's been discussed much more eloquently than I'm about to put it, but it is that tension between you want a badly behaved reality star, but not too badly behaved. And they don't want to define the line almost.
Well, that's what like confuses me is that I almost said, or I was not arguing, but I said something on Twitter last week saying I kind of wanted Jenny still there because I wanted her to answer for this. And people said, well, how dare we don't need it. We know her answer. We know this. And I said, we do because we're so locked in on Twitter and Instagram and we're living online. But most people aren't even aware that this is happening, aware that why she's going to be fired for. And I don't know if it's bad that I truly want to know, like, where does that come from, Jenny? Where does that hate come from? You're talking about running people over. Where is that? Like, I personally want to know. But I also am confused because I've loved when Ramona's been rude to staff in the past. I've sat there and I'm like, so where are my lines? And Bravo, of all things, shouldn't make me question my moral stance when you're looking to escape. But at the same time, I'm like, well, I love cheating. I love when Jax cheated on a bunch of people and hurt, you know, all the
morally.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Those are great moments in my life when he messed up his life. But at the same time, like, what is that line? And I know the people at home are like, well, I know that line. But sometimes I get confused because we see so many examples of this, and that's what the world is. And if this is a reality show, it's holding a mirror up to the reality of this situation, right?
This is what I've always said. Like, the appeal of shows on Bravo and reality shows like The Bachelor, that kind of thing, isn't necessarily so much what they're doing on screen, but how the viewer perceives it, right? Like, you think how you would handle that situation, or like what you would do if you were that cast. You know what I mean? It becomes like a social experiment almost. But they're so inconsistent with it. I mean, they just fired a cast member, you know, Jenny, who not two episodes ago, another cast member was mocking her slanted eye.
What I'm saying, you know? Mary Cosby, you guys, we've talked about this many times, but Mary Cosby's sitting there going, good, they got rid of the bad seed, when Mary's also a bad seed. Like, nobody on Salt Lake City, it's so fascinating because nobody really has the moral high ground for a show that is pretty much based with a religious backdrop. Everybody's of a different religious, everybody is on, like, we're dealing with cheating now, potentially people sleeping with the same dude, people potentially on a boatload of medicine that mellows you out potentially. And and by the way, Jen Shaw in any other season, in any other cast, we would be focusing on that. She is a criminal. And I'm so sorry to everybody. I've read the complaints. She has done this, but she is able to rehab her image like a Billy McFarland because everybody else is acting so piss poor insane with their beliefs.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
You guys, it is time for my favorite part of the show, where we get to talk about our sponsors. And this week, So Bad It's Good is sponsored by the one and only streaming service Sundance Now. So after a long day, I just want to curl up on the couch, as a man does, and get lost in a gripping story with characters I can love. And sometimes I get tired of those being Real Housewives. So I don't think it's too much to ask that I actually watch a fictional story, a story with amazing characters, great acting, all of that stuff. And that, you go to find that nowhere else but Sundance Now. So with Sundance Now, you always have something to watch that is binge-worthy, and that is the name of the game, and also something you can be obsessed with. Sundance Now is an ad-free streaming service created by AMC Networks. You guys know AMC, Walking Dead, pretty much every amazing show ever. So it's for people who obsess over riveting storytelling and fresh perspectives. Sundance Now has original prestige dramas, international thrillers, and bone-chilling true crime shows. Every show is a sleek production with sexy lead characters. They've got shows like the hit British series A Discovery of Witches, which is now entering its third season. It's the perfect mix of like period drama, romance, and edge-of-your-seat thrillers. Season 1 and 2 are streaming, but like I said, season 3 is premiering. It just premiered on January 8th. So there's 7 episodes in the third season. I love that it's not 20 episodes, and the finale drops on February 19th. In the final series of A Discovery of Witches, Matthew and Diana return from their trip to 1590 to find tragedy at September Tours. They must find the missing pages from the Book of Life and the book itself before it's too late. Their enemies are gearing up against them, and a monster from Matthew's past who has been lying in wait will return for revenge. Wow, that actually does sound like a Real Housewives show. TV Guide says it's pure catnip for fans of this genre. LA Times says elegant and satisfying. You can stream Sundance Now on all of your favorite devices for as low as $4.99 a month. That is very low. Just download the app or watch online and discover exclusive shows from around the world instantly. So, find your next TV obsession on Sundance Now. Try Sundance Now free for 30 days by going to sundancenow.com and use promo code SOBAD. That's sundancenow.com, code SOBAD, for 30 days of free streaming. I mean, guys, that is free. That's free for 30 days. You can just get it, like, come on, that's free for 30 days. That's amazing. Promo code SOBAD, and I'll put that in the show notes as well. And now,
it's incredible. The FBI literally raided her on camera, and that is the least interesting part of this season.
Well, that's what I'm saying. She is going to, I say this, she's going to go to jail saying she's innocent. She will never admit she's guilty, and we will see all the evidence, but we will never look at the evidence because we just want to see her say, I'm innocent. And like, yes, queen, I believe. Shot squad, queen. It's so like, but that's also another thing that I keep thinking about. Bravo is giving her an infomercial each week to push her bullshit, like to actually say, I'm innocent, you guys. I can't give you any proof. And now I'm going to distract and say, how dare you, Meredith, for tipping off the FBI? Like things that don't even make sense.
Mm-hmm. And it's happening not just on Salt Lake City. I mean, you could have just been describing Erica Girardi. Like, this is every show. It's crazy.
Well, it made like Beverly Hills, I railed on last season because I was like, nobody's really questioning Erica. They're all scared of Erica. Erica's like just making, like, Erica's coming for Sutton. And I'm like, yo, she has benefited from a criminal, whether she's participated in the crimes or not. This is like not any moral high ground where you have the right to be mad at anybody. And I was like, why aren't they all questioning her? But then if you watch Salt Lake, it makes those Beverly Hills girls look like they're master interrogators because they at least talked about it. Like Jen goes, Jen just screams louder and then we're supposed to be scared and it's done.
Mm-hmm. I do have to say Erica has one of the most iconic like excuses of all time about Tom broke his ankle and had eye surgery and then the car rolled 3 times.
and that man has been sick for years, and I was the only one that told. And why isn't his family taking care of him? You're his family, dork. Like Erica Jane was his family, and she's yelling at the other family for not taking care of him. I think it's such an interesting, that's another great thing of like, you see somebody that potentially, I'm sure she grew to love him or loved him in a way that you love somebody that pays for everything that you do. And, you know, I'm sure she respected that, but that's what happens. If you go down this road, you're going to eventually, it's not all like, do you ever think about this of like, these people aren't aspirational anymore? Like I used to grow up with celebrities thinking, oh my God, I would love to be, I don't know, Prince or Tom Hanks or somebody, like these would be so cool. And now I'm like, you couldn't pay me enough to be Kanye West.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, none of these people seem like they're having any fun, right? They have everything and they're miserable. That being said, I do love the fashion that I do find, especially Beverly Hills. The fashion and the homes are aspirational. The life, not so much.
See, I've always, the audience knows me. I'm an old Navy man. I don't know fashion. I am not a well-dressed man. And so that part escapes me, which is, I don't even know why I'm into Housewives because that's such a huge part of it. But speaking of the Kanye stuff, you mentioned exhaustion, and I do, whether it be Machine Gun Kelly and Megan Fox, whether it be Kanye and Julia Fox, you know, there is an exhaustion level that I'm feeling with celebrity culture. And I don't know if it's just because I'm older now and I've seen, like, you know, pop culture kind of repeats itself with these kind of archetypes, but the Kanye, like Julia Fox, you are a New York City kid. You have to be aware of Julia Fox. You might even be friends with Julia Fox. I mean,
6 degrees of separation. I don't know her personally. I do have to say, this really is the year of the fox now that you mention it.
I know. I said that too. And I was like, wait a second, did I just make a connection?
But yeah, you know, if it feels like you've seen this movie before, it's because you literally have, like the dramatic date and the new wardrobe and the photographers everywhere. We saw that on Keeping Up with the Kardashians a decade ago. Like, it's just the same movie with a new cast. They're rebooting the original.
Yeah.
But when it's so obvious that it's, and I mean, I have to give Julia Fox credit because she's having fun with it. Like the interview magazine article that she did, like there is like a little bit of mischief involved.
Well, Gabrielle, because I always think about this too, of like, okay, she's doing this. She's acting like she's in on the joke and like, oh, the vibes are right. At a certain point, though, where does it become playing with things and is it perceived eventually as cringy to then the people that actually really pay attention to this stuff? The general population, like she grew by what, 300,000 Instagram followers in the last 2 weeks? Like she's now passed 1 million Instagram followers.
I'm surprised it's so little.
Well, I mean, but it's leaping by tens of thousands every day. But you have yesterday Kanye putting the black swan eye makeup on her, where she looked like Uncle Fester a little bit, even though I know that's fashionable. But
I
like
was getting more of a black swan vibe.
Yes, but no. And I say this on the, because I look at Kanye all the time now with those chunky Balenciaga boots, And I hate them so much. I grew up in Kansas where there were snowstorms, and it reminds me of my snow boots I got at Walmart. And I'm like, oh no, is he going to make these fashionable, these chunky black boots that make your legs look really chunky? Like I just don't know. Like it's a really, what is your opinion of, I asked Kanye, and what we're seeing right now, because it just feels like a big show, and they treat Julia Fox like, wow, she got the big gig. She got the good job. Like, people congratulated Julia. Like, I mean, I know she was at your book premiere party. The author, Kat Marnell, and she was sticking up for Julia Fox on Instagram and on Twitter, and saying how real she is, and commenting about the Kardashians, but also saying that she deserves this. And I thought that was so weird for like a feminist thing, a feminist angle of like, deserves this. She treated it like it was a movie role. Is that what this is? Is it a movie role or is it a relationship?
I think it's the movie role element of it. And I think when Kat says that, she means that, like, you know, Julia has created this persona and she's built, you know, the work, and, you know, say what you want about her, but she was wonderful in Uncut Gems. Like,
oh, you know, I was like, who the F is that? That's how I first came to know. Like, she was so good.
Yeah. And so I think when you look at this game as a game of marketing, which I think is how Kat was looking at it too, like, okay, yeah, she's finally getting her due now. Like, she has created herself into this marketable, interesting character that is not convenient, but is advantageous for Kanye to align his brand with hers. And I think that's probably, I didn't read the actual comments.
But isn't that weird? It's like not love. It's like the Bachelor kind of love of like, when two brands unite, it's very special.
When two brands love each other. Yeah, very much.
They create a little brand. Yeah.
But I mean, that's what you're seeing everywhere, right? Like the Versace, Fendi, Balenciaga, Gucci, like everyone is collabing and capitalizing on each other's, you know, followings and brands to create, you know, an even bigger brand. And that is part of the scary part of what I was talking about before. We're like, we're not even normal people, like, who aren't famous. We don't treat ourselves as people anymore. We look at ourselves as personal brands. And, you know, there's a Fast Company article from 1996 that I think about all the time that was kind of the first that I know of to like identify this phenomenon, where it's like, you know, gone is the world where you go and work for one company forever and retire with a pension and all of that. Like, we as individuals are expected to be free agents who can market ourselves to potential employers, to friends, to potential romance. You know, we have to have this like self-contained brand. And that's, you know, a little intense and unnatural.
Oh my God. I mean, I feel I wonder if I'm led to believe this or I really believe this, but sometimes I look at my life and go, yo, this was not what I had thought it was going to be. You know, like, I'm not married. I don't have kids. All that stuff I grew up thinking was the norm, or what you even still see to this day. Like, my friends were using LinkedIn and I was like, what? You guys, I'm an actor. You guys use, what's LinkedIn? And they're using it every day. It's like, you make connections with other business people. I'm like, oh, and I started to make a profile and then realized I just wanted to make like a parody profile, because I just had this wasn't my reality at all. But I genuinely feel bad on a daily basis because my life isn't normal. I'm trying to learn to lean into, hey, it's okay to go off the beaten path.
Yeah. And not to get like too deep into the, you know, weeds of the problems of capitalism, you know, this is a fun discussion, but I think this leads to issues like the gig economy and the fact that companies like Uber and DoorDash and, you know, all of these companies are allowed to treat people as like disposable agents, right? They're independent contractors. They sell it to the masses as like, well, you're free to go and work for whoever you want and do whatever you want. And like, you can work your hours, like, you're independent, you're a free agent. But it's really just like hurting people, right? Like the people are worse off for the way that this economy is structured now. And I think it all plays into kind of the same, or comes from the same mindset of like, each person is an individual brand responsible for just themselves. There is no like collective responsibilities anymore. But also, just to go back what you were saying about Kanye's boots, you know, I also am not a fan of them, but I also thought Yeezys were hideous when they came out.
Yes.
And now I own them.
But isn't that the funny thing though, that like, I'm almost, it's like waiting to turn into a werewolf. I'm like, or like a Walking Dead kind of thing of like, oh my God, one day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to love those boots. because I've seen them so much and I've gotten used to them so much.
And I would also say, like, a fascinating thing about Kanye is, as good at marketing as he is, what makes him so interesting and kind of, you know, in a reality character kind of way is, like, he obviously struggles with mental health issues, and that comes through sometimes, and he's not able to kind of hide behind whatever branding or marketing he and his team are putting together. And so when that happens, those, like, moments of, like, oh, this is real, that's really fascinating.
It's in a fascinating public figure. But I found it interesting a couple of weeks ago when he couldn't find the address for Chicago's birthday party. The fact that I even am aware of all of this stuff is wild. But I sat there and I was worried, because I was like I would with a family member, of going, oh no, is this going to spiral him out? Like, this is going to end bad. And it didn't. Mm-hmm. Like, he went and had a good time. Pictures were taken. Chris, like, it all looked fine. But he went live with a video that he put on social media going, like, I need your help. I need, you know, and I realized, whoa, I am so weirdly interconnected with this man's life and celebrity lives in general, where I'm sitting here, we're like, oh shit, I should call Kim and let him know that he's coming. You know, like, I realize, like, I don't have their numbers. I'm sitting there worried, like, it's my girlfriend, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that goes back to the idea that, like, we're seeing these people on social media the same way we see people we actually know. And our brain is not equipped to separate that.
Is the next big scam metaverse, NFTs, Bitcoin? Is that the next big scam? I mean, I feel like NFTs, especially on Twitter now, is getting pushed. So Paris Hilton went on Jimmy Fallon last night, and it was one of the weirdest clips I've ever seen of her holding up the ape NFT she had. And Jimmy was like, I got one too. That remind, and, like, it was like this weird commercial within a talk show, and it was all, and then people applauded for their NFTs. And I'm like, nobody in the audience even knows what that is. And we're getting sold this thing so badly. It's like, that we just want to create other avenues of money, like, that don't exist. Like, let's create Bitcoin. Let's create this. Nothing is real.
Yeah. And now we have Matt Damon encouraging and Gwyneth Paltrow telling us to get into crypto. You know, once it's entered the influencer phase, I think that's a pretty good sign that it's not a great underlying product.
God, I bet Billy McFarlane is chomping at the bit. Like, please explain that. I was gone through NFTs. Yeah.
Well, you know, Ja Rule sold a Fyre Festival NFT and made some money off of it.
Of
but the
course.
Thing about NFTs, and not to get, like, too reductive, I'm sure most people know this, but, like, you're not actually buying anything. You don't own the image. You own a URL on which the image may or may not continue to be hosted. Like, it is such a scam.
Oh, dude, those dudes got a bunch of money to buy the Dune copy of Jodorowsky's Dune.
Yes.
Where you get all of the pictures, you guys, and thinking that they were like, we'll use all of the designs in this for a movie and we will own this, and not realizing that they just owned a copy of those designs and all that stuff. And they had raised so much money from people, and it was wild. Like, it's just all nothing.
They don't own that. The creator of NFTs has come out in interviews saying, like, I don't get it. This isn't real. Like, why are people taking this seriously? Like, there are serious flaws in the system, and nobody listens. And this is even the same thing with the Fyre Festival. There were so many whistleblowers leading up to that event, and nobody cared because they were so awed by the celebrity aspect, by the idea that they could, like, get rich fast. You know, our brains, like, override any sense of, like, cynicism or reality when you get excited by celebrity like that.
Well, it's this brand, though. You say Fyre Festival, people completely know about it. I remember seeing a guy with a t-shirt from the actual Fyre Festival in a store once, and I was like, wow. Like, I was like, he's been at the Mecca of Fyre Festival, you know. But I mean, you were a producer on that Netflix documentary, but then Hulu, I remember, rushed one out, or, like, try to beat you guys by a couple days. And I was like, this is wild. Now we're actually having, like, pop culture wars over documentaries about a failed pop culture. Did you realize, like, how crazy that sounded when you were in the middle of it, or were you just furious?
It's actually really fun. funny. I was shooting a promo for NBC when I found out that they had dropped it. And someone said to me, like, oh, the Hulu doc, they just dropped it. And I was like, oh, they're not putting it out. Like, I didn't understand that it meant that they just released it. But what they did, and I got to give them props for this because it was brilliant. Netflix had an embargo on reviews for the Netflix documentary, and they released it at the same time that the embargo lifted. So anytime you wanted to Google Fyre Festival, the Hulu doc would show up. It was actually like a very smart, devious marketing campaign.
Well, even that
we got the Emmy noms.
No, I mean, yours was amazing. I mean, it was just so weird to, like, it was all of a sudden like that summer where like two volcano movies came out, or two like earthquake movies came out, where all of a sudden there's multiple Fyre Festival things and everybody's going to tell their side of the story. But you even tell like the Fuck Jerry guys were, you know, part of the brand marketers for the Fyre brand. It's like, we're all, I mean, if there's pop culture, somebody's being manipulated somewhere.
100%. Yeah.
Okay. What's that?
Oh, no.
No, I'm just saying, like, this is my favorite conversation I've ever had. We only have like 12 more minutes. So I'm going to like, what do you actually, I noticed your Instagram isn't like, you're not trying to be an influencer at all. You're not trying to do, like, I don't think you even have a Twitter anymore. I try to look up your name.
I do have a Twitter.
You do? I couldn't find it. I was like I was like, oh my God, she deactivated her Twitter account.
No, I have a very difficult relationship with social media because I feel the impulse to like present yourself in a certain way. And I don't want to be like that. You know, I'm not someone that's like comfortable talking to the camera. Like, you'll never find me doing that because it just feels so unnatural. And it's weird because I mostly use social media either to like post pretty pictures or like promote writing work. And like, I don't know where the, you know, I want to be authentic, but like, I don't know how to actually do that. Like, it's a highlight reel. And so it's very weird. I'm more of a lurker than a poster, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, how, that's what I was like, your relationship to social media. Like, my mom has a Facebook account, but she never posts on it. She just spies. So you'll hear my mom going like, your buddy Nick had a great meal the other night, it looked like. And I'm like, what are you talking? He's like, he posted it on Facebook. Like, and my mom doesn't realize like that Facebook is like, I'm like, mom, I don't even like go. There's no, I'm not nowhere near Facebook, but it is her lifeline. And it is really interesting. But do you lurk on, is that what you're like on Instagram? How many hours a day are you finding yourself spending still after doing all of this work talking about the effects of it?
A disturbing amount. You know, as an experiment for the book, it really fucks with your brain.
Yes.
As an experiment for the book, I deleted social media off of my phone. And I would find myself in times of boredom or loneliness or whatever, unconsciously going to where the app used to be on my home screen and opening up whatever had slid over to take its place. So I'd be like, why am I in like the Hertz car rental app now? And it's because my brain was like telling me to go on Instagram. And there are all these studies that show, you know, how addicted we become. Like, these apps were built basically like slot machines. And so, you know, if you pay attention when you're scrolling through, you'll get one post that the algorithm kind of has determined, and the algorithm, like, it's a sentient being, but has determined that like you really want to see. And then you'll see like two boring things and then another interesting thing. And it keeps you like locked in and scrolling. Like, it is devious as hell.
Oh, I'll admit, you guys, this is disgusting, but it really is like an addict or a gambling addict, I would imagine, is that if I have a post that doesn't hit, I'll immediately doubt myself and my sense of humor and my take on something. And then I'll be like, you know what? Fuck it. No, I'm going to double down. I'm going to post something. I'm going to get 1,000 likes. No, that's it. Like, I get, and that's like, that's gross behavior, you guys. That's just gross. And that I put my self-worth into that. Of, okay, if I get enough likes, that means I'm a good person. If I don't, I fucking suck and I need to die, you know?
Well, you know, everyone has to find their own relationship with searching for.
I love Gabrielle at the end of this interview. She's like, I'm worried about you. I just want you to be okay.
Yeah. No, but that's a very human need or want to have external validation. And social media has put it in your pocket, like in your hands at all times. I really think that the moment society really changed that, like, that we can pinpoint is when Facebook went from being, you know, something you did on your computer, like you would go to the URL facebook.com, to like it actually being on you at all times. Like, we are so hopelessly connected now. Like, there's no real way to disconnect. You know, everyone that quits comes back eventually.
I was reading that thing about Elon Musk and what is the Neuralink company he's invested in. And you guys, he's pretty much selling like a hard drive for your brain. Like, do you want more storage? And like, you're like, wow, that is. And in my head, I was like, I kind of do need more storage. I feel like I forget things now. I feel like that could really free up some of my mind. But where are we going from here? And I guess that's the thing is, after doing all of this research and then living this the last year and a half since the book came out, where do you think we are headed? And I mean, that's kind of where are we headed and what's changed in the last year and a half since you wrote this book?
I don't think much has changed. You know, I have a theory that Elon Musk is just Billy McFarland with more money. You know, I don't see a lot of meaningful distinctions between the two men, to be honest. If you look at what Elon Musk's track record and what he's created versus the way that it's marketed, it's kind of the same thing. Right. He has come up with these self-driving cars that can't drive themselves. And when they try to, they crash and people have died and had serious injuries. He created this futuristic Hyperloop that is basically just a Holland Tunnel for Teslas that, you know, it's supposed to solve transportation. And instead he's creating underground like traffic jams. You know, his space endeavors have been a little bit better. I believe a lot of that comes from like, you know, that federal funding and real people working on it. But what he promises and then what he delivers are so vastly different. But he was really benefited by early social media. You know, back this kind of requires delving into like how media worked in like the, you know, early 2010s, but a vast majority of traffic was driven by Facebook. And there were these groups, like, I don't know if people remember the I Fucking Love Science group that had millions of members that reacted really positively to interesting Elon Musk news. And he was kind of created by himself and the media into this, like, you know, who's a Marvel character that's based on him, the Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, Iron Man. Yeah.
Yeah, like people thought he was like a real life Iron Man.
That's it. People want to believe in something, right? Like we want to believe in the billionaire that's going to create a spacesuit like we love in the Marvel movies and that he's trying to like save humanity when the reality of Elon Musk's situation is far different.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that's another thing where like when the moments of real life come in, it's very funny. Like when Azalea Banks was tweeting about him being on acid and her locked in his house, and you kind of see the like, oh, okay, the myth and the man are very, very different.
No, totally. I mean, like the grimes of it all. I mean, God, Azalea Banks, that's another one. You're probably friends with Azalea Banks or something, but she could just, I've always said how scared I am because if she ever meets me, she'll be able to destroy me within one Instagram post. Like she feels like she can like brutally knock you down, you know?
Well, you want to talk about someone who can use social media authentically. I think Azalea Banks is like the perfect example. Like she is not concerned with how she's coming across. She is just going to say what she wants to say and you can take it or leave it. And a lot of it is, I would leave it, but some of it is
you know? Well, I wonder how close she came to getting the Julia Fox role with Kanye. If there were auditions, I feel like she could have, you know, always reminds me of those rumored auditions for Tom Cruise's wife back in the day. Mm-hmm. Katie Holmes eventually got it, but Scarlett Johansson was allegedly in the running and stuff. And I always imagine that of like, I just find it so interesting when people are auditioning for real life roles, you know?
I mean, that's been going on since the start of Hollywood, right? And that's something we kind of like accept. And it's almost fun to play armchair detective and say like, is this real? Is this not?
Is it you or know, is that, it is, but then QAnon happens, you know? Like when everything is now a conspiracy theory. I say this every day is that like, I only like to believe in conspiracy theories when it comes to Bravo, but everything can't be a conspiracy theory all the time.
Yeah. And you know that, I don't know if you remember this, there was, this is like a pre-QAnon thing that I guess we should have seen as a harbinger, but there was that Crazy Days and Nights gossip site.
Yeah.
There was a poster on it who was leaking information and claiming to be Robert Downey Jr. And people truly believed that Robert Downey Jr. was in the comments on this like Blogspot website revealing, you know, like super insidery Hollywood information about like sex trafficking and underage actresses. I mean, it is a direct precursor to this QAnon kind of attitude. So it starts in pop culture and branches out from there.
I think for me, it was just like, yo, guys, Tom Hanks ain't eating babies. Like, you might want to, also, where do you find the time? And also, if you're going to say Hillary and Bill, like, supposedly, if they eat this gland or whatever, they look like shit, you guys. The gland doesn't work. So if that's follow the rabbit hole down, it just doesn't even make sense from a logical standpoint. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. I've noticed people's willingness to believe. They just want to believe in something. And that's what's frustrating, is because they'll make any connection possible to mm-hmm. believe the thing that they want to believe, and there's no truth anymore.
Well, that is the human psychology behind it. You know, we have entered, I think Oxford termed it the post-truth era, where your feelings are more important than the facts. Like, your gut feeling overrules whatever the fact is. And you couple that with the fact that if you believe something to be true, you can find evidence, you know, and I say this with air quotes, online to support that. And it, you know, I was saying, like, you can't tell what comes from Reddit and the New York Times if you're reading all day, but like, it really does come down to that. Like, if you believe that Bill and Hillary Clinton are evil people, you can find evidence that will support that. And then these algorithms, YouTube and Facebook, will start serving you information to support this mindset that you have decided based on a gut feeling. Like, it is just like a perfect storm. And it's horrifying.
I could talk to you all day. Finally, what do you watch now? What do you read? What do you like to actually, I mean, what are you into in the sense of entertainment that kind of you can escape from and not think about all the things that you know?
You know, I do love Bravo. I would say I've been in a yellow phase, so I've been watching
Yellow Jackets.
Yellowstone, that's a nice escapism.
Was it Yellow Jackets? So it was so fun to Yellow Jackets was so fun to be part of and I was talking, like, what do you feel about the release strategy of not binging anymore in one a week?
I kind of like it. It makes it a little more special. Like, it's getting back into like must-see TV, and it's fun to have that, forced waiting, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Waiting always makes it a little, there was that Andy Warhol quote about like not doing it is even better than doing it sometimes. So the wait is actually sometimes the best part, the anticipation of it.
Yellowstone though, every girl that I know has recommended Yellowstone. And I watch a season and I realize, guys, I'm a straight dude. I don't want Rip. Like, I don't want, like, I feel like all the girls want it because they're so hot for all these cowboys. I'm sitting there watching the first season going like, when does this get as amazing as everybody says it is? Because all of a sudden it's just like cowboys. But then I realized no guys have told me they like this show. It's all women. And then I realized if I look deeper, they're like, I'd love to do things to Rip.
Well, I think you probably know a lot of horse girls. there's some romance in the American West, the idea of going out and making your own fortune with your hands and riding horses all day and being a barrel girl. I don't know. I like it. It's fun.
Kevin Costner's career is fascinating with like Dances with the Wolves, directing, and he is the, I guess, new American Western man. What is next for you? I know you said you cannot talk about a couple of things before we got on, but like, I mean, is there another book in the works? Like, I really got so bummed out when this book ended, and I just loved it so much. And I loved your voice so much. And where can we get more of that? Where are you allowed to say anything that's coming out for you?
Yeah. So, I'm mostly focusing right now on kind of long form investigative pieces. I have a piece coming out in a couple of weeks that I think is going to be really interesting. I can't say too much about it now, but I am on the scammer, grifter, con artist beat, and that beat never ends. Like, you know, not to steal the P.T. Barnum statement, but there is another scammer born every day. And so, I'm going to keep investigating this stuff. You can find me in the New York Times, New York Magazine, variety of publications, and maybe there will be another book, you know, let's get your readers right to my publisher.
There really should be. And by the way, I was like, God, this book also was, I thought, so ripe for a TV series level of just like scams. Like, I mean, like, I was like, this is Netflix right here. I could see every episode of this, because we didn't even get a touch on Caroline Calloway, which is really just fascinating because at the end of the day, I'm like, why doesn't she just write the book? Write the book. You wrote scam. Write the book, you know, but she doesn't want to write the book. So it's like this performance art piece that I'm like, oh, it's sick that I'm even thinking that this is a performance art piece when this is potentially maybe just mental illness, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I ordered one, so I'm still waiting for my copy to come. But, you know, there may be a hype series. It has been optioned. We are working on it. So
I think I would just really, really love that. I think that would be so, so good. And really, so it's all of us fans out here, we share the same DNA on what we like. So from Bravo, you guys, this is a direct correlation. And, you know, Leah's even in there. So you have that housewife kick, but also it just is everything that we talk about all the time. It's like pop culture and scammers are go hand in hand. So I highly recommend this book called Hype, you guys. I'm going to put the link on the show notes. I'll put her website address, all of her social media, and hopefully you'll come back, because I really could. This was just so, I was so excited for this. So thank you, because you're just so talented.
This was so much fun. As you know, I've been a longtime follower, first-time caller, but I would love to come back and talk about this whenever you want.
Oh, dude, anytime. You, if you want a monthly segment, you got it, because you are just, I mean, really, I'm like about to offer you a co-host slot, because it's just so cool. I was talking to my Monday co-host, Sophie Ross, about you, and we were just big geeking out, and it's really cool because there's like everybody that I really like knows you and knows your work. And
I'm a big Sophie fan. I interviewed her about Ariel Charnas for the book, but
she was the one that first explained to me what fast fashion was, because I had no idea what it was. And she was really screaming about it. So it's really been fascinating to do this and kind of learn how the culture works right now. So guys, Gabrielle Bluestone, you better be back, because this was just my favorite hour ever. And you guys go get the book. It was a year and a half ago, but it is still just as you could read it today and it would come from this week. I swear to God, it's on Amazon. I'll put all the links, and the audiobook is great too. So thank you so much, Gabrielle.
Thank you. This is really great.
Betches.